Hey gang, quick bit of housekeeping for you before we start the show. And this is only relevant to those of you who listen to us on the Apple Podcasts app or via Apple. So if you don't, move along, as the great Obi-Wan Kenobi would say, nothing to see here. But if you do listen to us via Apple, listen carefully, particularly if you're an old school listener of the show. Before we became the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN, when we were the NFL show, you would have got the show updated when we moved without having to do a thing. But that's because the old show had a divert put on it. So to check, you're subscribed to the new feed because the old one is going to go pretty soon. Check out the Nat Coombs Show. Search for it on the app via the podcast browse section or the store section if you're looking on the desktop, and find our show and see if it shows whether you're subscribed or not. If you are, great, you're on the right feed. If you're not, hit subscribe and delete the old one. So head on over, not in your library, but actually onto Apple. Search the Nat Coombs Show. Make sure you're subscribed to the feed that you find. Simple. Good luck. Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show on ESPN. Good to have you with us. We've got a lot of pods coming your way over the coming weeks and fine guests. NFL, UK royalty, I would go that far. Neil Reynolds, Jay Bell, Carlson. What a holy trifecta that is. So chats with all three of those come up over the next couple of weeks. We're going to chat some fantasy as well. Get you set post-free agency and the draft with an early look at 2020 fantasy, because there will be a season, gang. I am confident. I'm optimistic. I am positive about it. So keep your eyes and ears peeled for pods dropping all the way through May. But let's get straight down to business. This time around, he'll be looking back at the 49ers draft. I'm sure we'll get into that and plenty more besides with our regular friend of the show, comedian, presenter, Tom Deacon. Thomas Deacon. Are you a Thomas? Have I ever called, can I call you Thomas? Is that, where are we with Thomas?
I can't believe you don't know. Yes, I am a straight up, fully qualified Thomas. A Thomas Holmes, as in Sherlock, Deacon. There you go, full name for you.
As in Sherlock. There are so many similarities.
Yes.
The name connection just being, name association just being one of them. It's great to chat to you, man. How's lockdown treating you?
I think it's treating me the same as it's treating everyone. Look, life is offering us lemons at the moment, but I am sick of lemonade.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm fed up with lemonade. But however, you know, I'm feeling very blessed. You know, family's well. We're just staying at home, and it's, do you know what? It's mad. Like, all my stand up comedy work is gone. Out the window.
Forget about it. I was gonna ask about that. So stand up in lockdown, because other careers that involve an audience are adapting, aren't they? So take, for example, yeah. I don't know, fitness instructors, right? They're sort of doing virtual classes at home, or all kinds of classes are being taught at home. Stand up, is anyone attempting to do a kind of live show with people watching via Zoom?
Yes. I mean, I think every industry is adapting. Personal trainers know that people don't like their bodies, so we're fine. So they've still got work. And comedians
combine
know
the two, of course. Do a bit of PT.
Well, I mean, Joe Wicks is hilarious.
Leave him alone. Lord Joe Wicks.
Okay, Lord. Oh, okay. I thoroughly was enjoying his classes, and then once I realised he didn't know where countries were in the world, I thought I'd take a little breather from Joe.
The difference between me and you is I liked him more after that than less.
Do you know what? Anyway, let's not get into Joe Wicks, but I was doing his workouts. However, you asked me about stand up comedy. It has diversified. People are now going online. They're setting up shows. They're just so different. And as a comedian, as a performer, I haven't been asked to do a straight, what I'd call straight stand-up comedy, where you're telling jokes just to the camera. For me, it doesn't quite work, but hey, we don't have anything else. Is that good? I think what we have to do now is try and create something that's slightly different. We know it's live, so you interact with the chat. So like every industry, we're trying to work out But at the same time, sorry, Nat, it's moving into esports. Another side of my world is presenting, and that's booming.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about that. Just really, because the F1 stuff you're doing is great, and you're involved with Cammy, amongst others, which is just surely a bucket list moment for you. But just a quick line on the stand up, and connect that to SNL as well. That in the States, and Saturday Night Live rolling out shows, but without the live audience. And this is obviously something that I think we encountered with the draft, and that was successful. And we'll obviously talk about the draft and talk about your 49ers and how they did as well. That worked. It, you know, everyone, I think by and large, enjoyed that whole process, and it didn't matter, or at least it certainly didn't dramatically alter the enjoyment of the draft, not having that live audience. But live sport is, it's a huge concern, isn't it? That there's going to be just an altogether different proposition without fans. And I guess that's, you know, you're seeing that firsthand with things like stand up, and we're seeing it with TV shows like Saturday Night Live that just need the energy of a live crowd. Then it really adapts and impacts, I guess, everything that unfurls in the same way that comics and performers feed off live reactions. Certain players do as well. And so it's going to be really intriguing, isn't it? If we do get a season, great. But if it's behind closed doors for much or all of it, not sure how I feel about that at the moment.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's so relatable, not necessarily stand up straight to the NFL that we absolutely love, but in terms of, you know, I know that I have a better gig when the audience are giving me more. It's to and fro. It's that chemistry. And the likes of, I mean, I saw a quote, George Kittle, the tight end for the Niners, saying he wouldn't mind going to play at the Seahawks, because then they won't be on his back, you know, and so I suppose it's a negative and a positive. It depends on how you look at it. But personally myself, stand-up comedy, is the most awkward thing, talking to my phone, recording myself, telling a joke, and there's no response. And I have to look like this is the most normal thing in the world. And it's not normal. This is completely beyond our wildest thoughts that this would be happening. But hey, this is the state of play. Do we want a season? Do we want a draft? Yes, I enjoyed it. Was it the usual, the same? No, but it was completely different, you know, but I don't mind that.
I want to get your take on not just the 49ers, but speaking of stand-up, Goodell's deft one-liners to the wall of fans each time, which is absolutely my favorite part of the whole thing. But let's talk before we get into that, the gaming you're doing and esports, as opposed to, you know, your private gaming that you're doing at home with your mates, but professionally speaking, hosting esports, because that is really flying right now. And you're doing the F1 stuff on Sky Sports, of course. And as I say, you're getting involved with Cammy and Ben Shepherd and lots of other dignitaries and famous faces from the world of sports in the UK. So tell us about that. And it's great. It's really flying at the moment. It makes a lot of sense that it is, of course.
Yeah, listen, the two separate things, the F1 and Cammy, do not go together. So they're very different.
Disappointing me.
I know. I mean, did you see who won the race? I didn't, Jeff. The F1 esports has been going for the last 3 years, and I've been very fortunate to be the host of that. And that's pro drivers who are in the sims, the simulation drivers, the top of their game, I guess. They got signed by the F1 teams, but now all of a sudden there's no actual Grand Prix. So the people at F1 said, why don't we have the virtual Grand Prix? And instead of just having F1 drivers, we'll have a mixture of celebrities. So the likes of Sir Chris Hoy joined in the first week. You'd also have Ian
Joe Wicks.
No, Joe Wicks, no, because unfortunately, when we said we were at the virtual Grand Prix in Bahrain, he ended up in a different country.
Leave him alone.
So listen, we had that, and it's more of a kind of fun entertainment side. When in the esports world, there are sim races and tournaments going on at the moment. There's one for Porsche at the moment where it's $200,000 up for grabs for the winner. That's one level, and that's, I'd say, serious sim racing. And then what we're doing is providing something very entertaining on a Sunday night. Now, Natalie Pinkham's joined from the Sky F1 team.
Yeah, of course, a lot of our older school fans will remember from the Channel 5 series back in the day with me, her, and Trevor Nelson. That is a deep dive going back. That's 10 years ago, I think that was. Or maybe, but yeah, it's about 10 years we made that. A long time ago. Yeah.
And
but she loves her NFL.
She is fantastic. And I think what that does is it says to people who are watching on Sky Sports, hey, hang on a minute, I know Natalie Pinkham from what I know as the real life races, and she's on board with this. Oh, this is great. And hey, look, it alleviates a little bit of that competitive nature, but also it's entertaining from the mundane of staying at home. So that's
which
brilliant.
NFL player would make the best esports Formula One driver?
I don't know, someone like, I can only talk from the Niners perspective, but Richard Sherman, the guy with the IQs, cool. But then again, he's lost a bit of pace. So maybe he wouldn't be the ideal candidate for.
Did you see Matt Stafford the other day? He was asked some ridiculous arithmetic question. Like, what's 945 times 755? And he was like, hang on, an answer. So Stafford would be good. Yeah. Any quarterback would be strong, I guess, for the mental smarts.
But it was when he was kind of like he was tapping with his fingers like the Rain Man that I thought, whoa, this guy's got the tangibles right there.
Big time.
But yeah, the F1's brilliant. I hope it's entertaining people and they're enjoying it. And then also the other day, working with Ben Shepherd and Cammy with a whole host of celebs like Dillian White, Lando Norris from F1, Stuart Broad, who's actually got a sim rig for F1. He'll be racing on Sunday with Ben Stokes. You've got that element, and that was to raise money for the NHS. So I don't know, people seem to see me as someone who can host on esports, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it, and as there's no stand-up comedy, I'm more than happy to dive into that world.
Roll with it. Well, I think it's a great, congrats first things first, and it is a great time to be involved with it, because inevitably with lockdown and with so many sports in hibernation and so much inertia in terms of live sport, esports, and I know it's a kind of nebulous terms like esports, there are, you know, so many different entities and strands and varieties, but virtual gaming is flying, and I think we all knew it was, and I think it's a generational thing. We've spoken about this before, but I think on the show and offline, right? That it is going to be, I just take my kids as an example, and they're still, too young to kind of really be watching competitive stuff like that, but their life is all about gaming and, you know, their YouTube diet is all about gamers and gaming and FIFA and Fortnite. And it, there's a whole generation coming through that quite conceivably could, at the very least, like esports as much as live sports, but quite possibly be far more into virtual gaming than the actual sports. It's a fascinating time and a brilliant time for you to be involved with, mate. So rolling it, well done on that. Speaking of virtual, let's talk about the draft, because it, for me, as I said at the top, it absolutely worked, I think. And there were lots of reasons why it did. The well-documented humanization of it, because they had kids and family running around, and I think everybody enjoyed that, and the insight into people's houses. I was listening to Ross Tucker the other day, friend of the show Ross Tucker, who on his podcast was saying what amazed him, actually I think it was his co-host on it, Andrew Brandt, who's brilliant and very sharp mind, who used to work in the front office, I think back in the day at the Packers, but was a front office guy for a long time, and he said he couldn't believe how many people, when you consider that GMs and coaches, they're all millionaires, right? They're all earning top dollar. How few of them had their own office at home? How many of them?
Listen, that's the thing, that what people have to understand, we see them as like, oh, they're the GM of the Green Bay Packers. I bet they're absolutely rolling. When they come home and family life, I mean, as you know, you know, you're not the king anymore. you do not rule the roost. I mean, right now, for example, I'm in the spare room. There's washing that needs hanging. There's washing that needs sorting.
Feel free to multitask as we're talking.
Oh, thank you. I'm not so great at the folding, but listen, I mean, that's the nature of it. And I thoroughly enjoyed seeing part of that and looking at Cliff Kingsbury's gaff. Unbelievable scenes. I mean, what a palace that was. And then you compare that to with the GM from the New York Giants and the fact that they were allowed a couple of tech guys in each.
Yeah.
Yeah. In each house. And it was bizarre. I wanted them to hurry up at times. And I also wanted to know what the trade implication was, you know, like, is it a fifth round pick that's been traded? Mm. You know, they would say things. That was my only critique of it, was, and the fact they didn't, I guess, critique each trade. They just kept saying, this is a great pick for the Steelers. What a great pick. No one was saying, well, actually, I think it's a bad pick. You know what I mean? I didn't think there was enough of that, which we normally have. However, in the circumstances, the virtual world was, I genuinely found it pretty fascinating to look into other people's lives and Roger Goodell going, come on guys, you can do better than that. And then turn every time.
That was my favorite bit. Well, just, I like the ones where there was no dialogue. There was just a slightly kind of menacing, calm down or winding them up, like stoking them up to give. And often that was quite incongruous, where he was doing the kind of gestures of, come on, I can take it. you know, bring on your worst. And they weren't really doing that. They were just all kind of bumping around in there.
I noticed, I was looking quite intently as I was at that hour in the morning. I was just looking. I was like, well, okay, well, what are the fans? Are they all dressed up? And then I go, how many cheerleaders have joined this team?
Yes.
and I was like, that's a heck of a lot of cheerleaders. Why haven't they got more fans? I thought that was quite, it made me chuckle a little bit.
I might well go back through the broadcast again and really study the win. Just that bit. I might write a 5,000 word essay on the Commissioner Goodell just before each pick moments, the 10 seconds of each one.
But what I thought was beautiful, eventually he stood for the first part, then he sat down, then he was slouching by the end. And I thought, I agree with you, Roger. It's a long draft.
In his bunker. So good draft for the 49ers by all accounts. A lot of people, I suppose, putting it in combination with free agency as well. And of course, busy old movements around the draft. So we'll look at the picks in a moment. Trent Williams coming, and you got to be happy about Trent Williams joining the ranks.
This guy's a pro bowler. This is some say a left tackle, maybe, I don't know, Hall of Famer, but this guy has clearly got the talent. He wanted to be paid more at the Redskins. They said no. They had an opportunity, I think it was last season, to get a first round pick for him. And they said, no, we know best. And guess what? The Niners stepped up and offered a couple of mid round picks, one for next year, the year after, or no, I think it was this year. So we got a brilliant left tackle for next to nothing on a 1 year deal. You know, it's, you know, prove it. Because unfortunately Joe Staley has called time on an incredible career.
Yeah, that's a big void to fill. So it was a fifth this year and then a third next year, which is good value for, as you say, a pro bowler. And I know that there've been issues with, you know, with him at the Redskins, but I think that is as much, if was significantly down to the Redskins as opposed to Trent Williams. I don't think there's any suggestion that there is. I was chatting to Greg Rosenthal about this the other day, actually, saying, is there an element of risk here? Is he known as a bit of a troublemaker when you're prolonging, deal negotiations and it turns sour? How much of that is on the player? And of course it changes on a case by case, but I don't think anyone thinks Trent Williams is a bad egg sort of come in. His ability is undoubted, but also, as you say, to replace a character like Joe Staley, that is a huge void to fill. And there are a handful of players that would be able to do that, I reckon. And he sounds like he's one of them.
Yeah. And also people have to remember that Shanahan, first pick at the Redskins, Kyle Shanahan's dad had the first pick was Trent Williams. So, you know, this is not a guy that's unknown to Kyle and what he brings behind the scenes. So if anyone knows what the guy's temperament, character is all about, he wouldn't pick him otherwise. So to get him, I think that fills a hole. And you mentioned about free trades and on the trade block, who was going to be an expensive player for the Niners and filling to that salary cap was DeForest Buckner. And he's now gone to the Colts. We got that the first round pick, which we ended up replacing him like for like. And this is what I love about the draft was that we should get CeeDee Lamb. He's still on the board. We should get so-and-so. And even I was like, we could get an amazing wide receiver here. But the Niners have gone for a front defensive player for the last five out of the seven picks that we've had in the first round. And it was always going to be Javon Kinlaw, who is a like-for-like replacement and is cheaper. So I like the fact that they've looked at the books and it's been a good managerial pick as opposed to the flashy one.
Of course, it was such a deep draft new for receiver, and a lot of players, I guess, outside of that top three of, and it was a surprise, I guess, that Ruggs went first, although not a surprise that he went to Vegas first, because they love their speedsters. But, you know, outside of those top three with him and CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy, then it was a kind of pick 'em really in many people's eyes with maybe seven or eight additional other receivers. And I'd seen a lot of different mocks with different players higher up and certain buzz about certain receivers, and Brandon Ayuk was one of those receivers that a lot of sharp minds were saying, you know, watch this guy. He is a hell of a pick, hell of a receiver. The Arizona State wide out that went to you in the second round. So when you factor in the lineman he got in the third round, right? Colton McKibbitz, it's a pretty strong 1-2-3. A lot of the draft grades for the 49ers, very, very high. The guys that are watching these good players in and out, week in, week out, at college. I know Ben Isaacs, our very own college expert, very big on what you guys did. So yeah, you got to be happy. And he got picked up a receiver right at the end as well, didn't he, in the seventh? Juwan Jennings.
Yeah, I think what was interesting, you mentioned about the wide receiver. Yes, we needed a wide receiver because Sanders had gone off to the Saints, so we needed a replacement. And yet we're now stacked with wide receivers. You know, Dante Pettis. We got rid of Goodwin. He's gone to the Eagles. They were desperate for wide receiver. But Brandon Ayuk, we actually traded back up with the Vikings to get him. So we gave away sort of fifth round picks to make sure that we got him. So to me, there's a lot of pressure on him, but I mean, the talent's there. And Juwan Jennings dropped in terms of on his combine, wasn't up to what people expected. So he dropped down, and I think he could actually be a real surprise pick. I'm very happy with that draft. We were already, hey, let's not forget, we were at the Super Bowl. I think this plugs a few gaps. What I do think is interesting in terms of cornerback, we didn't address that potential need. And I think this is what every team is now thinking, or the fans are thinking, well, did we address that? Did we fix this problem? But I 100% behind Shanahan and Lynch's is draft on this one.
And you've got to be reveling in what's going on with the Packers, which has taken an interesting turn in the last 24 hours or so with an interview that Brett Favre gave with Rich Eisen. And Favre talked to Aaron Rodgers, and he was careful and discreet and made sure he didn't disclose too much information, but I think he suggested that Rodgers was understandably surprised with the fact that that they took Jordan Love in the first round. And it's such an interesting dynamic, isn't it? Because you think about how Rodgers fell in the first round in the draft that he was in, and fell to the Packers, and he became the ultimate replacement for Favre, and there wasn't a huge amount of love lost between them. And then now Rodgers is finding himself in the same situation. I think a lot of people are scratching their heads with this deal, saying with a win now approach, which the Packers definitely have. And this was a point Favre was making in his interview with Eisen, that there are a number of teams in the NFL that are in win now mode, right? There are clearly some teams that aren't, that are developing, works in progress, transition, all that jazz. But the Packers are a serious contender. So, with undoubtedly a future Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. So why on earth wouldn't they be concentrating on arming him, particularly when there's such a significant need for receiver, for example, and it's the best wide receiver draft in 10 years? Why would they be spending a pick on the future? I guess the counter argument to that, and people are saying, well, look at the Packers' approach to quarterback play. They've had an elite quarterback, a Hall of Fame, a franchise quarterback for over 20 years, right? From the succession from Favre to Rodgers. And they're in that game. And I think, well, if we've got an opportunity, this is our guy, and they really buy into him, then this is our guy. We've got to take that opportunity. And I kind of understand that logic as well, that we don't know, clearly they're into Jordan Love, otherwise they wouldn't have drafted him in the first round, but we don't know just quite how much they're into. I think this is our guy that can take us forward. We think we got a decent shot. As people have suggested, look at how firm the conviction the Chiefs had with Patrick Mahomes. And at the time, you know, he was, sure, a quarterback that had potential, but he wasn't a lock-style quarterback in the same way that Joe Burrow is supposed to be. You know, the eyebrows raised that they took Mahomes, but they believed in him, and that worked out pretty well. So what have you made of it? Which side of it are you on? Is it out of order to Aaron Rodgers, or do you understand that the Packers' mindset that this is a guy that can be a franchise quarterback for 10 years, that supersedes any other need right now?
I mean, you make so many brilliant points there, Nat. I don't know. I the proof is in the pudding. I think we all know that as NFL fans, but the draft is all about where you can get good value for your picks. And the higher the pick, you want them to be start now, and be slot straight into your team that you already have. And there's no way that he can do that, you know, because you've got Aaron Rodgers. So to me, it's Jordan Love coming in now. Great. If you think he's the future of the franchise, brilliant. But what does it say to Aaron Rodgers that you've not picked a blue chip player of brilliant value that can slot into the team now to help Aaron Rodgers win another Super Bowl? To me, I think.
Yeah, it's a double whammy, isn't it? It's like, not only have you taken my successor, or somebody you think could be my successor, because really, presumably that's why you've taken him, you've taken me in the first round, so you've not offered me anything else. I mean, the Packers will argue they've strengthened elsewhere, but I mean, yeah, come on, in the first round.
Yeah, and the fact that Aaron Rodgers is, you know, apart from Devontae Adams, you know, what wide receiver has he really been given to succeed? You know, I know Jamal Adams and the name escapes me, the other running back, Aaron Jones. Yeah, those are your running backs. That's your weapons to help Aaron Rodgers. And then he had Graham, who's now left the tight end. But you're like, well, how are you helping him? And I know that Gunther Kunt said the importance of that position to our franchise is something to me that just can't be overlooked. Great, but why now? Why such a high pick? And he must, and they must, Matt LaFleur, think that Jordan Love is extra special. But the fact of the matter is, us fans and people who follow this will not get to know whether that's going to come to fruition or not until Jordan Love plays and until Aaron Rodgers retires. So this is something that we're going to have to think about or wait and see what happens until it actually does. But at the moment, I've decided, Nat, I think it's a terrible pick.
Terrible. There we go. You this is, you're wrestling it backwards and forwards. You land on terrible pick. And it'd be interesting the reaction that it creates and engenders with Rodgers. Obviously, he's pretty fed up about it, but given
it's a terrible pick right now. I think that's all we can say for the draft. For me, why not make the Green Bay Packers get a wide receiver, get someone who could, or a tight end that can help Aaron Rodgers, and in the meantime, take a quarterback that you think highly of in the third. But that's you don't get one of those quarterbacks. So I suppose if they really believe that Jordan Love is the future, take him now. But hey, you've got some explaining to do, and I imagine there's lots of gift set, like a box set arriving at Aaron Rodgers' now. Like, we still think you're the guy. We still love you.
Is there a fruit bowl? I think there's a fruit bowl. Two words for you, Tom Deacon, Mike Glennon. Oh. I mean, why didn't they look at Glennon?
Of course, Mike Glennon.
The quarterback of the future.
We all loved Hard Knocks. We all like watching Mike Glennon. I mean, McCown, you know, Josh McCown is not ready yet to be an analyst. So why not? why not take that old timer?
What about the Jameis Winston deal? What do you make of that? The 1 year deal he signed for barely over league minimum money at the Saints. And he's talked about it being like a Harvard education, I think was the analogy he gave, working under Drew Brees. And a lot of people respect the fact that he's taken a massive pay cut, a 1 year deal, to A, learn and hone his trade, to sit and regroup a bit, given his obvious talent and his, conversely, his obvious flaws. And I suppose it's quite shrewd as well, because he's watched what Teddy Bridgewater did in New Orleans last year and re-upped into a starting gig. He watched what Tannehill did going to Tennessee and biding his time and re-upping into not only a starting gig, but a massive contract. And he's thinking, well, actually, I'm young enough. I've got the opportunity here to do that. But a lot of people like the fact he's taken this path. What do you make of Jameis going to the Saints?
Personally, I love it. I think, all the talk about Jameis Winston being a franchise number one quarterback, I think at times he's shown that. And a lot of other times he has definitely not shown it. Mm-hmm. And when he said that quote about learning from Drew Brees and Peyton, I think totally. I mean, they're the best of the best. You get to learn from them. When he said that I'll get a Harvard education, what I found quite funny about that was when he was sitting behind Ryan Fitzpatrick, he had a Harvard education. So he actually
literally.
Literally he could have learned from Ryan. But you know, Jameis showed so many moments in last season where he was lights out, 5,000 yards, 30 touchdowns. Yeah. However, the other bit of that is the 30 interceptions and killing the Bucks at times. They've upgraded. They've gone to Tom Brady. And where was Jameis going to go if no other team came for him? We saw what happened with Teddy Bridgewater at the Saints. Different circumstance. He was coming back from almost a career-ending injury, but he's allowed himself to go, all right, I've learned. And Jameis gets that. It'll be interesting to see what happens between him and Taysom Hill, because Taysom comes on as a kind of gadget quarterback, and he's just signed a big contract. So I think more than anything, hey, it's not always about the money. Learn from this, Jameis. Prove to other GMs around the league that you can learn, you can be more mature. And then maybe the Saints will get a high or higher draft pick for him. So again, great, you know, business sense from the Saints.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it? If there is a suggestion that this is going to be Breece's last season, you're hearing that buzz that he's going to have one left and he's done. So that will become interesting. I guess Jameis's people and therefore Jameis must have wind of that as well. I think it's quite instrumental. If you're signing a 1-year deal and the quarterback in front of you, who is one of the greats of all time, you know, he's got 3 or 4 more years left in the tank. That's a very different proposition, yeah. Right? But there could conceivably be a starting gig in New Orleans next season. Now, Teddy got the opportunity to show what he could do to parlay into a starting gig. Tannehill got the opportunity because Marcus Mariota wasn't up to it and they made the change. That's not going to happen with Breece unless something extraordinary happens. And there could be an injury there, I guess, as well, which will give Jameis the chance to show what he's got. But there might well be the opportunity here that he doesn't get any game time, and then they've got a difficult decision to make. But I guess he's got plenty of film and that have been working with him all season long. They won't have been working with him in an orthodox sense in the off season, of course. And that is, it's going to be fascinating, isn't it, Tom? Now we've got a prolonged period of time where we know that restrictions, certainly if not lockdown, are going to go on for a very long time. And that's going to really impact how teams are getting ready for the season. Assuming the season starts on time, the preseason, the off season is going to be incredibly different, incredibly strange, isn't it?
Yeah. It's unconceivable. It's inconceivable really how that even begins to look. Apparently certain players can go into the facilities, but you can't have a full potential 90 man roster, rocking up on site. So what do they do? Do they draw up plays and say, learn this, to your mind, but the body will not remember, what we're going to do in our practices. I mean, it is mad. It genuinely is mad. And can the season even start? I mean, I saw somewhere that a lot of people in America don't want to go to the stadiums to watch the games because there isn't a vaccine. And yet, what does that mean for the players? I know that Von Miller had, Corona. So you kind of like, well, how do you even begin to train safely? How does that, the college season won't necessarily start on time. And I think a lot of teams in the draft didn't have a pick for next year. They were like, let's just get a player now, mentality. So if it happens behind closed doors, fine. But, you know, I worry about, it's not like, any other sport where there's so many personnel, in one team. Yeah, it's going to be, I personally can't see it, so I've enjoyed the draft as much as I could.
We'll get on that virtual Madden gravy train.
Yeah.
presumably that's the logical next step for you, right?
Yes, it is. And I don't want to say that I've won 4 Super Bowls with the Niners, because that would be boasting. But I did trade out Jimmy Garoppolo and bring in Nick Mullins because of financial things.
Did you?
Yeah.
And you still want a Super Bowl? Where did you deal Garoppolo to?
I dealt him to the Dolphins.
I love it. He'll come back to haunt you.
Yeah. Sorry, Nat. You said about Jameis. I can foresee the storylines for whenever the season does start. And like you say, like I'm hoping it starts as soon as it's safely possible to do so. But what I love about the Saints in this draft is they've taken Jameis on board for relatively not a lot. They get to look at him up close and know whether he could be the replacement for Breece. Then you'll have the playing out of Taysom Hill, whether he is vying for that number one spot. That could be the future storyline. But when you look at the Eagles and they took Jalen Hurts in the second round.
Yeah, I love that.
I just was so shocked at that.
And I love the Hurts pick, but hey, that's for another time. I'm a big fan of the pick, even though I know a lot of people weren't, but I think there's a huge amount of upside there, but it does open up a can of worms as to what they're thinking about Carson Wentz. Sorry, I cut you off mid-flow though.
No. I think there's so many things that happen in the draft, but with Jalen Hurts, when you talk about value and Jameis has that value or potential value to offer something back to the Saints, and if Breece gets injured like he did last year and Teddy Bridgewater came in, he can step up and we know he's got an absolute cannon of an arm to zing it out to Thomas and Sanders. But with Jalen Hurts going in the second round, if he's not going to start, I personally see that as being, where's the value now? When you might trade him in years to come, because you've got Carson Wentz. It's a different story. Carson Wentz has probably got years on him still, whereas Breeze hasn't. And it's interesting to see how teams navigate through that. And it's remarkable.
As you wisely said, man, we have no bloody idea until three, four years down the line is when we'll, you know, and this is, we see it every time, you know, top two picks that Blake Bortles was the third overall pick, for goodness sake. So there are, who knows? Look at where Russell Wilson went and where he landed now. Look at Dak Prescott, same thing. It is great to catch up with you, man. It is great to hear that things are flying so well for you. And I'm glad you like the 49ers draft as well. Look after yourself, Deeks, and come and check in with us soon.
Oh, man, I'd love to. And a massive shout out to, hope that everyone listening is safe and well and looking forward to it, Nat.
Lovely to catch up with Tom. Sky Sports is where you watch his eSports F1 stuff. Tom H. Deacon is how you follow him on Twitter. So he'll be pushing that stuff out and other stuff he is involved with comedy-wise. Go and show him some love and get behind him. Neil Reynolds, that pod is what we're going to be dropping next. Keep your eyes and ears peeled. Should be sometime next week. But as I said at the top of the show, pods coming thick and fast. So stay with us. Keep safe, gang. Catch up with you soon.